And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Monday evening here in the DMV. I hope everyone is doing well. It was a quieter day for the Commanders on the free agent front, but still, they added another player, Mike Davis, cornerback from the Chargers. He was number 19, including three re-signings, so I'll talk about all of that in a few moments. I'll play some audio from one of them, running back Austin Eckler. We've had all the players come through on Zoom with us over the last few days. Austin Eckler was today. Needless to say, he's one of the more interesting players for the Commanders. Certainly fantasy football people are going to be interested in him, so I'll play some of that, including his thoughts on why Washington and what happened last year. Didn't have the best number year statistically, but he's got some thoughts as to why that was the case. But today's guest, Bruce Feldman, one of the top college football voices, not just for The Athletic, but for all of the country. He's as plugged in as it comes. Bruce and I spoke a few days after the combine. And we went into great detail about Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, you know, what he's, you know, trying to separate fact from fiction on some of these players. We also talked about some players that are on his freaks list that he puts out every year. It's a great resource for college football fans. And now this time of year for NFL draft watchers, he highlights some of the more athletic players in the country, including Chop Robinson, defensive end from Penn State, who could be there and play for Washington, but maybe in that late first, early second range. We also got into the wide receivers, offensive line, some of Caleb Williams's teammates at USC, including Jerry Rice's son Brendan Rice, and a bunch more. So that's going to be a really informative conversation we'll get to in a few minutes. And I've got some other thoughts as well on a couple other topics. So we'll get to all that in a moment here on the podcast. Of course, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Really appreciate everybody has been saying a lot of great things about what we've been able to put up on here over the last few weeks, in addition to what's going up on The Athletic, the website. I had a story on today touching on just a few different topics about where the Commanders are after the first week of free agency. What does the pursuit of, or the signing of, not so much the signing of Marcus Mariota, but the pursuit of Sam Darnold, does that tell us more about their plans for the rookie quarterback they're expected to take at two? Got into that, got into some Frankie Louvu talk, and a bunch more. So make sure you check that on The Athletic. We still have the deal, $1 a month for 12 months. You can get that. Click on one of my articles and you're good to go. All right. Let's get to some thoughts here. So I mentioned at the top, number 19, Mike Davis, cornerback, played with the Chargers. I actually had him on my, he was listed in the others category in my free agent story. I'd be honest. I had him as one of the guys we broke out as a profile, but I ultimately switched him out with Jordan Lewis, the Cowboys corner, because I just, as we've seen, they've been signing a lot of guys. They also signed another former Dallas cornerback today. I'm going to completely butcher his name, so I'm not going to try, but I think you guys will. He's a depth special teams guy, Noah Igbiani. I'm sure I'm saying that way wrong, but in any event, so Mike Davis, he is the experienced guy, right? He has started a ton of games the last 5 or 6 years for the for the Chargers. He has, you know, his defensive backs coach in Los Angeles was Tommy Donatell, who is now the new Commanders defensive backs coordinator. Davis said that was just sort of a happy coincidence, but this is an opportunity for him to, you know, play. And, you know, the role, you know, part of what I wrote in my story that went up today was, until we get a lot more clarification from Peters and so on, we really just don't know too much about how they're intending to use everyone. That said, Davis, Emmanuel Forbes, and Benjamin St. Juste, pretty clearly the top three corners at this stage. Sure, none of them are number one. They've got to get some, you know, longer term play, all these types of things. But nonetheless, they've got somebody now who can play. And this is sort of the same thing that's going on with a lot of their other positions, off the defensive end in particular. They're filling in the gaps with guys who can go out there and play. They are not breaking the bank to try to win big next year. They do have some upside guys like an Eckler, like a Jeremy Chinn, where, hey, if things go well, if they return to form, then maybe and the rookies, particularly this young quarterback, if that's who starts, play well, then, hey, maybe there's a surprise. But most likely, that's not going to be the case, but there's still a lot of gains to be made this year, regardless of the record, and helping the young players by having competent vets around is one. Davis is, as I said, one of those guys. So I think this was a pretty solid move. Again, like a lot of their moves, nothing spectacular, but we're talking about a guy with 74 career starts, 13 last year. Without Kendall Fuller, they needed some other presence. Now they have it. They still could use more help there. And the fact that they have, you know, six picks in the top 100 gives them that ammunition to either draft players at whatever positions they want or to move up to target some specific players. Now, of the 19, 15 are primarily offense defense. So I'm not counting the new kicker, the new long snapper. I'm not counting Jeremy Reeves, and I'm not even counting Jamison Crowder, even though Reeves and Crowder can play. Obviously, you receiver and safety, they are more, for the purposes of this discussion, more about special teams. So, of those 15 left on offense or defense, only five signed for contracts for more than 2 years. That would be linebacker Frankie Louvu, center Tyler Biadasz, defensive end Dorrance Armstrong, guard Nick Allegretti, and they all were for 3 years. Austin Eckler signed a two-year deal. As we know with these contracts, you know, you always got to be leery of that sort of last year of the deal. They may never get to see it, but nonetheless, that's what they did. And I would say, you know, Louvu and Biadasz are the two that you're like, okay, these could be cornerstone pieces for the next couple of years. I don't mean cornerstone like they're taking to the Super Bowl. I just mean as they start to turn things around, assuming that does happen, they'll be guys who will, you know, should be front and center of that. But the point is that they have signed a lot of guys who should help this team. I just mentioned Davis, Cleveland Farrell, one of the defensive ends. We spoke with him today. He's a Richmond guy. Said he used to go to training camp down there, you know, was it RG3's first home game. So he's clearly a big fan of this organization. You know, those types of guys will definitely help, but they are not stars. They are the fill-in-the-gap guys that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are relying on to help, you know, stabilize this roster, turn things around, and, you know, show the locker room, you know, what it takes to be a professional in this league. And that is a huge deal. No doubt. So I do think that I just wanted to point that out because, you know, again, I think a lot of people are focused on 2024 in terms of this lineup. And certainly from that perspective, there are some significant holes. There's still the offensive tackle spot is definitely, you know, no idea who would start tomorrow if such a thing were to happen. Of course, it does not. And, you know, they need depth at a bunch of spots. Who's the third receiver? All these kinds of things. But they are, it is pretty obvious. Like, they're never going to come out and tell us, they're not going to tell you, the fans, hey, don't count on much this year from the wins perspective. But their actions are saying a lot. If they were going for the win now mode, they'd be signing guys to, you know, 4-year, $80 million contracts and so on. Or they'd be restructuring contracts to generate more, even more cap space, even though they still have a fair amount. So just keep that in mind. But I think, you know, so far, everybody wants to know, what do you think of what they've done? I think under that, understanding what it is they're trying to do, it isn't about winning big this year, but winning big for the long term. I think they've made some pretty reasonable choices. They have spent long-term money or longer-term money on players who are in their 20s who fit the timeline of where this thing is going. They've added some clear, you know, locker room role model types, Bobby Wagner being the most obvious. And like I said, they've got a couple flyers, Jeremy Chinn, Austin Ekeler, who, hey, if those guys hit or, you know, return to where they were, then, you know, that's a pretty big win. So I like what they have done. I think it's been some really good, some good work, and we'll see if they can continue it. You know, if they don't get, they still have like roughly $50 million in cap space, or over that number, according to over the cap. So they can still do a lot of things. That said, the money, the cap money can carry over till next year. Next year is when I would see them being more bold, especially if the young quarterback shows, doesn't have to be CJ Stroud level, but shows it that he's a player. Now all of a sudden you can use that, you know, take advantage of that rookie contract, dive in, get a lot more pieces, etc. So like you've seen, the Bears are already kind of doing that, even though Caleb Williams hasn't even played yet, but you know, they're buying in that that's going to be a thing. The Texans are doing that more this year, right? They signed Danielle Hunter, you know, one of the top two or three free agents in this class as a pass rusher. That's you can do that when you have CJ Stroud as on that rookie deal. So I would say so far so good for the Commanders on that front. They're at number 19. We'll see who number 20 and beyond is. Speaking of the draft, just to, you know, hadn't talked about it as much the last week or so, and we'll do that with Bruce in a minute. But you know, I of course I've, you know, continued to talk to people around the league to try to get a feel for where everybody is at with these quarterbacks. At this point, I'm assuming Caleb Williams is going number one, unless there is a, you know, his camp comes out and says we don't want the Bears. But I feel like we've moved past that, so we're going to assume that that is not the case, and he goes one. From there, you know, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, I think J.J. McCarthy, we now have to make it a trio. Again, this could be completely false. Last year, Will Levis was being talked about as a top five pick. He slips to the second round. Malik Willis a couple years before that, and so on. So we know this can happen, and maybe this J.J. McCarthy buzz is a mistake. But, you know, we had Randy Mueller on this podcast, a former NFL GM who, way before the combine, was talking to us about that he liked McCarthy more than Drake May. There seems to be, not saying that everybody thinks that way, a lot of the public evaluators are still saying Drake May number two, but J.J. McCarthy is definitely getting some noise. I asked one former GM who he would pick at two, and he, you know, said, hey, I, you know, don't have all the information because I'm not meeting the players, but he said he would take J.J. McCarthy. I spoke to another former GM who is, you know, still does scouting. He said he would go Daniels, then May. You know, if you interpret the Minnesota Vikings trying to get or acquiring a second first-round pick, one interpretation is they're going to take both of those picks and more. They've got number 11 and 23 to move up into the top four or five to get a quarterback, which then presumably would be McCarthy. So, you know, there are more and more signs that McCarthy is going to go pretty high. But as we've learned before, you know, you never know for sure. There's a lot of crazy hype, I think it was on the Rich Eisen show talking about how, is this the time of year where people get bored? Post-combine, pro days are upon us, but really it's kind of a, you know, quiet period for the most part till the draft. And now you're even seeing like Marvin Harrison Jr. not being the automatic number one receiver that we all had talked about and heard about for months, that maybe it's Malik Nabers from LSU. The point is that one rumor, one idea, one concept, one thought, one scouting report couldn't change the conversation. And right now the conversation has J.J. McCarthy getting closer, if not already right there with Drake May and Jaden Daniels, even though of them, he was the one that, you know, was least prolific in college because he played for a team in Michigan that just didn't need to rely on him with their great running game, their defense, obviously coached by Jim Harbaugh. So they, it's going to be really interesting. And I wish I could tell you that, hey, I know what the Commanders are thinking. I know what the consensus is out there. In both cases, you know, they're keeping it tight to the keeping it tight over there. And simultaneously, I am not finding much consensus. There are people that like May and Daniels. There are people who have big questions. McCarthy, it's more the questions are more like I watched him play in college, and you know, there wasn't much going on. But you know, from what I've heard from some, when you really get into the tape and really break down the throws, it's pretty impressive. I heard also, I have said before that for me, the litmus test on a quarterback is it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. We're talking about a big game like the playoffs, not week 5. Can you make that throw? When the defense knows you have to do it, when they know what your strengths are, how to take you away from that, can you make that throw? I think that was one of the issues with Justin Fields, why he slipped, or he didn't slip, but his value in that trade with the Pittsburgh, a 6th-round pick that can turn into a 4th based on playing time, was much lower than expectations. People I talked to said, hey, I just don't love him for that specific reason. And I think that's what... Oh, so anyway, so Daniel Jeremiah on his podcast, The Moving the Sticks, he said that he thinks that of these quarterbacks, that J.J. McCarthy is the best one on that hypothetical 3rd and 7 scenario. So something to keep in mind. Again, don't know if what the Commanders think about it. By the way, I did have a GM a couple weeks ago tell me he only thinks there's 3 quarterbacks worthy of being in the first round, and McCarthy was not one of them. Again, there's no real consensus out there. We will continue to monitor the situation. By the way, I will have a mock draft up on The Athletic, I think next week, I want to say. I should probably start writing that. But I think next week, and of course we'll do more Commanders mock drafts throughout the next month or so. All right, last thing, Chase Young has a new home. Chase Young is now a member of the New Orleans Saints, which of course means fun for me that our guy Matt Paris, who is now covering the Saints, gets to continue covering Chase Young. 1-year deal, $13 million. It is, from what it was reported, and then from what I can tell, it's essentially a guaranteed $13 million deal, assuming he plays the whole year and there's no issues, as opposed to like an $8 million deal with incentives. That is a pretty good raise from where Chase Young was making a year ago. It's far below what a franchise tag would be or if he had signed a multi-year deal. I don't think anybody realistically thought he was going to sign a multi-year deal because I'm not sure how other teams would be able to, give him those extra years when I think there's still some questions, whether it's about the knee, whether it's about his hustle out there, as we saw in that one playoff game. There's no questioning the athleticism. He can make, he can be a playmaker, but needs to show more consistency to get that bigger deal. He's going to have that shot now with the New Orleans Saints. Good for Chase. Hope it all works out for him. But everybody's moving on from this point around these parts. All right, so let's get to it. Let's get to my conversation with Bruce Feldman. Now, just as a heads up, we spoke before free agency began. So whatever we're talking about, Caleb Williams, I don't remember if we talked about Justin Fields, but just obviously ignore that. Talked about a linebacker in this draft who I had put in my mock draft, my Commander's mock draft. That was before they went and got Luvu and Wagner. But it's still, if you're into the draft, there's a lot of really good information here from Bruce. Again, one of the most plugged in guys around. So excited for you guys to hear that. And then we'll get to some Austin Eckler talk. So here we go. Here is Bruce Feldman on the Standing Room Only podcast. There's a lot of awesome things about working at The Athletic. One of them is the colleagues that you have all over the place, including my guest here, college football insider Bruce Feldman, who also, of course, does great work on Fox Sports, and he was with me, not me, but like he was there with us at the NFL Combine doing his thing there, and he of course is the author of the Freaks List, that is a great guide to who are the just that the athletic freaks of college football, and now these guys are coming to the pros. Bruce, thanks for doing this. We were just discussing coffee, so I know you're ready to go. Thanks for doing this.
No, my pleasure, Ben. And I was with you at the Combine. I remembered my last night there, seeing you near the Starbucks and one of the sky bridges with our friend Josh Kendall. And it was impressive that you guys can write in the middle of, like, not Grand Central, but it was like, I could never stay focused to write anything. I was like, you know, in the middle of all the, you know, I'm like rubbernecking all over the place. So it's good to see you in a little more lax terms.
It is fascinating. I mean, you know, I don't know what people have any sense of the Combine. I know I see some comments on Twitter. People think all it is we go there, we watch some interviews, and then we go out at night and get drunk because that's like sort of the perception that people have, like, because it can be late hours, but everybody has their different deals. Like, you know, you're out there trying to like talk to as many people as you can. I mean, we all are to a degree, but you're doing that. And yeah, sometimes in between you have to write, and the Starbucks lobby at the JW Marriott's good because A, there's some tables, and yeah, if I put on my headphones, I can focus, but then people are walking around. I saw randomly Ron Rivera standing there at one point, Nick Caserio, the Texans GM, all kinds of people are milling through there. So yeah, it's, you know, you have to work, like you said, through the Grand Central Station noise, but you know, it's effective.
Yeah, I love the event. I mean, it's one of my favorite. Obviously, as you said, I cover college more than NFL, but it's one of my favorite events on the calendar just because there's a lot of coaches I know and, you know, a bunch of scouts that I've now gotten to know. And it's just good. Plus, there's a lot of media people. I get to see guys like you once a year. I mean, that's I don't know. I think it can be kind of an exhausting, because I feel like you're in a casino for an extended amount of time. You're not, it's not totally really a casino, but. You know, I was there for 5 days, and when I left, I was pretty exhausted. I used to be I'm not complaining. I used to be a much more resilient person, because I will go out at night and try to, you know, feel like that's part of it too. And, you know, it's fun. And then plus to see a lot of the college players that I've covered, and you see them in a different setting, and sometimes, you know, you can run into them, you know, you're kind of happy for them because you know what some of them have been through, what they look like when they were probably 18 or 19. And now to see them there, you know, at the end of their college process is really cool.
It's one thing to, you know, people mature, you know, over the course of their life. And during those college years, obviously, it's a very new experience for everybody who's going to college, just regular students. But to see them physically mature the way you're seeing them, especially where guys come in, you know, freshmen, they're still, you know, they haven't hit the weight room enough. And 4 years later, you're just like, oh, my Lord, what is going on here? Yeah, it's got to be interesting.
No doubt. It really is. And, you know, look, one of the guys in probably the top five pick, Jaden Daniels, was super skinny when he left LA to go to Arizona State. And he's still pretty, I would say, wiry, but he's definitely come a long way. And a lot of these guys really do.
Well, since he mentioned him, by law, I have to stay on that with the team I cover. I mean, the large conversation about Jaden Daniels is, how much does he weigh? Is he too thin to play the style of football that he plays on the NFL level? And if you're saying he's physically bulked up a bit, not maybe bulked up is too strong, but he's gotten bigger.
No, he's definitely bulked up, because I want to say, I don't know this for sure, I'd have to ask, like, I know somebody who was, you know, in the strength and conditioning at ASU, but I feel like he was, you know, in the 170s at when he got there. And it's not like he's 5'11". I mean, he's pretty tall, but yeah, he definitely got bigger and he improved a ton. I mean, I was, you know, kind of wowed by how much he improved in the last 2 years at LSU.
How do you have to go through this all the time, right? You're talking to people at all these different colleges at all times, and you get information, and that information, sometimes it's people are giving it out or saying things for an agenda or a purpose, but sometimes it's, hey, this is the truth. This kid did X or whatever it might be. How do you, like for a guy like Daniels, like we're all trying to figure out, like, what happened here? How did he go from a career high 17 touchdown passes to 40. How did he go from being a non, you know, not even discussed as a first round pick to maybe being the second player picked? He wins the Heisman. How do you, like, whatever information you're getting on these guys over the course of a year, how do you get that? And also, by the way, the flip side is Drake May didn't have as great of a year last year relative to expectations. Now, you know, as I'm talking to people, questions about the footwork. He's sloppy. Chris Sims today put out his rankings of quarterbacks. He had Drake May sixth behind even like Bo Nix and Michael Penix. How do you, like, as you do your job, sift through all this stuff to figure out what is actually real and what is perhaps nonsense?
Yeah, I think some of it, Ben, is beauty's in the eye of the beholder a little bit. And in the case of, you know, I'll stick on Daniels for a second. I mean, he made big improvement from ASU to LSU. And then this past year, he took another huge step forward as a passer. And, you know, one of our colleagues, and this is one of the great things about The Athletic, you know, you have so many really good writers who get to go tell fun stories. One of the better stories I thought that was out there for a college story is actually really wasn't, quote, a college story. It was written by one of our NFL writers, Alec Lewis. And it was on the virtual reality technology that LSU has a guy named Jack Marucci. And Jack Marucci is arguably the smartest guy I know who works in college sports. Longtime trainer, was at FSU with Bobby Bowden, and then Saban, Les Miles, Ed Ogeron, all of them at LSU, was a trainer. But he was so much more than what a lot of schools know as the traditional athletic trainer. He's also the Marucci, by the way, behind the Marucci baseball empire. I mean, just like a fascinating guy, brilliant man. And he always got into processing and some of those things that always were looked at as things that were hard to quantify back in the day. And when I say back in the day, even maybe 5 years ago. And Jack found this company from overseas. And I read the Alec Lewis story on it because it's really, really good. And I think it spoke to just how big of an improvement Jaden Daniels made as a passer, how he sees defenses, how he reacts to stuff. You know, because I don't think if he didn't make the jump he made in 2023, I don't think he is a first round quarterback. I mean, he's a terrific athlete and he's a very tough kid and I think he's a smart kid. But as a passer, that's the area where I think he went into made people rethink just how accurate he was, just how he saw it, how he responded to stuff. And it's really cool. There's nothing I love more, especially covering college, than seeing guys who change the narrative, or people wrote them off, or people didn't think they were this, and then all of a sudden they prove people wrong and they're not that guy. And I think to his credit, and look, and you know, in full context, he was throwing to two first round receivers. And right. Then, you know, and they weren't just, it wasn't just those two guys, but Brian Thomas Jr. spectacular, Malik Nabers spectacular, had a pretty good offensive line. It wasn't like he was playing behind what Caleb Williams was playing behind. So I'm interested to see how he does in the NFL. I mean, I know this, you didn't ask me this part, but like, you know, there could be five quarterbacks go first round. Mm-hmm. You know, odds are, two or three of them at least are not going to work out very well. I don't, you know, I wouldn't, you know, feel comfortable saying, oh, I know who those three are going to be, because I think it depends on what situations they go into.
Well, normally, historically, I would say, well, you know, one of them will be drafted by the Bears because they never get it right. But I'm not going to say that this time. Caleb Williams, assuming that's where it's going to go, looks legit. No, I hadn't read that story. I will do that because obviously Jaden Daniels is part of my beat, he and Drake May at this point. Before I'm going to get to the freaks list, I swear. But before that, you mentioned Caleb Williams. You are an LA guy. You know, obviously you're covering the whole country and all that. So I don't know how much you're, you know, on top of USC on a regular basis. But obviously last year, Cliff Kingsbury was there. He is now, of course, the OC here in Washington. Some wonder if he was being hired because they were going to make a move for Caleb Williams. I'm assuming no, but I'm just curious, like, what, you know, to what degree did you get a sense of Cliff Kingsbury last year and kind of just his journey there and you know, what, I don't know, kind of what was he almost even like kind of doing there, and how does that, you think, kind of help him now that he's back in the NFL?
Yeah, I think Cliff is one of the smartest football minds that has come through college football in a long time. And I covered him even when he was at Houston as an assistant working with Dana Holgorsen and Kevin Sumlin, and then obviously at Texas A&M where he really had a big role in Johnny Manziel winning a Heisman, and then as a head coach at Texas Tech where they were kind of digging out of a hole, I felt like, roster-wise for a while. People know what he did with Patrick Mahomes. He was really the first one who saw it in Patrick. I think just as an OC, I think he's really creative and knows how to attack certain things and is good at that. I think Cliff is somewhat different than the perception of him, because there was this, you know, obviously the Ryan Gosling memes, and he's kind of this playboy persona, but he's also the guy who's in the office at like 4:30 in the morning studying film. That's always what he was when he was working in Lubbock, Texas. So I think he's a really good offensive coordinator choice for them. And he does, you know, he spent a lot of time working with Caleb and being around Caleb, and, you know, because he was working with Lincoln Riley there. They did not have a good offensive line. I think some of the concerns I think that people might have about Caleb were, you know, you have a bad offensive line, you have a bad defense. That's kind of a bad dynamic for a quarterback.
Sure.
Because I think you feel like the best line I've heard of on Caleb was from an old NFL scout who had told me midseason, right around the time I think they lost to Notre Dame, and he did not look good in that game at Notre Dame. And this person said, it looks like he's trying to hit a 5-run home run every play. And I do think there's some of that with Caleb. He's really, really, really special, you know, in terms of his ability to improvise, make off platform throws, can do the spectacular. You just want to see him do the not spectacular a lot. And I don't doubt that he can. I don't doubt that he can, that he could do that. I just think, you know, there's going to be growing pains with all these guys. I could see the fit. I don't think it's a slam dunk. Oh, we hired Cliff Kingsbury, so we're definitely going to take the guy who worked with him. I don't think it's quite that way, but I do think, you know, the people I talk to, and I'm close to some people on the USC staff, and the feelings on Caleb are very positive about him and him character wise and that stuff. I think a little of the challenges, and you talk to, you know, being at the combine, I heard a lot more about this than you do out here in LA, but it was just like, okay, Caleb's dad is something of a handful right now, just because of his feelings on how he will, you know, he thinks they should handle his transition to the NFL and what all that means. I think those things are things that probably, I don't think they necessarily scare anybody, but I think they're things that are in consideration. You know, one of the people I did a story for our site on Monday, just about my takeaways from the combine. One of the people I talked to was like, there are no red flags on Caleb. There are some things you kind of think about, but there are no red flags on him. And I think, again, this guy covered up a lot of warts for USC in 2022 when Lincoln Riley first got there, and they first got there, and they were a team that didn't even make a bowl game. And then they actually were a border, you know, in legit consideration to make a playoff spot. They didn't. He got hurt. He hurt his hamstring early in the Pac-12 title game. And then they end up losing again to Utah. If he stays healthy, they might make that. They might win that game. I think they probably would have. And then, you know, maybe they do make the playoff. Now, I think they wouldn't have won a game there because I just think their defense was so suspect. But, you know, he's talented now. I mean, man, he is the wow guy in this draft.
I'm trying to think how to say this. So one thing I think is interesting with Caleb Williams is that so much of what the discussion is about his personality and some of his just, you know, emotions, quirks, what have you. And I do find that I've reached an age where I can see the generation gap. It's not just like somebody is younger than me and we're different, but like, I can see, like, it's like I don't know what the age is. It's like 32 and under based on, like, people I've been around from where I'm at, they were just raised differently and in a different environment and different thoughts. And I wonder if on some level, part of the conundrum with Caleb, not that he is the first guy per se like this, but like that it is everybody needs to recalibrate how they view the modern athlete as much as it is him individually. And we may just not have completely gotten there, at least as a collective group, as it were. And I wonder if he, and especially then on top of it, the NIL factor, where he's basically the first guy to have gotten paid this much before he even steps foot on an NFL field. And I just wonder, on some level, do we have to, as a group, rethink how we're looking at some of these guys?
I mean, we did a story at The Athletic late in the, basically in the winter, late in the season, about kind of what went wrong with USC this year and how they kind of fell apart. And, my colleague and I, Antonio Morales, had worked on it, our USC beat writer. And one of the things we'd heard was that the team kind of felt like an AAU basketball team, the way they had this vibe where it was like, there wasn't a lot uniform about them. And some of that, I think, not a lot, but some of it was, people took their cues from Caleb, where it's like, hey, one guy's in a golf cart, and, he was very generous to his teammates in terms of the stuff he did through his NIL to include them. But it was also, there was a vibe of, from some other, with other players, about just, it didn't look like it typically does with winning football teams, where people look like they're on the same page. And what is the culture of this program right now? And I absolutely don't think that's Caleb Williams' fault, but I think he became the face of that, right? And then all of a sudden, when you don't win everything, because they did win last year, or when I say last year, I mean 2022. I mean, they won 11 games. But when you don't win and aren't on top, people nitpick. And so, I think in the game that I had mentioned where he got hurt in the Pac-12 title game, I think at some point, I was at the game, so I wasn't watching the broadcast, but it was like, I don't know, there's some like a thing about he painted his fingernails and what did he put on the message that. And like, it's typically stuff you don't see from quarterbacks. It may be stuff you see from other positions.
Right.
It may not be, it's just like, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, are people going to really make a big deal about this, or is it just going to come up and go away, kind of thing. Like I said, the people I talk to at USC who are inside the program really do think highly of him. And that's why I suspect, the people I talk to in the NFL who've had some of those same conversations was like, no, there are not red flags on him. There are stuff that you just kind of, he's still really young.
Sometimes that is the part that people forget. I mean, these guys are worth talking about as if they're like finished products. They're human beings who are in their 21, 22, 23. Like, God forbid anybody said, that I was a finished product. I mean, I would argue I'm still very much still needing to mature. But like the idea that like that's who you are.
Yeah. It's human nature. We're still learning. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I feel like we all do, if we're being honest with ourselves. You're like, man, I could have handled that a lot better. Ooh, I wish I didn't say that. That happens. It needs, and if you're a person who doesn't do that, that's probably when you really have issues.
100%. Since we're on USC, I'm going to take advantage of you knowing this program. There's two guys in this draft that are beyond Caleb Williams that are USC guys that I'm fascinated by. One is Marshawn Lloyd, who I didn't realize his backstory. I think I'd heard he played at DeMatha, but here in the area, but I didn't realize he's from Delaware, and he drove 2 hours each way with his mom to go to school, go home, and then come back. That says a lot. And obviously DeMatha is a big program, so that says just a lot off automatically about him. He's also, he pulled off the USC double USC and South Carolina. That's pretty funny. And then the other one is Jerry Rice's kid, Brendan Rice, who I honestly didn't know too much about, but I see he's like, I think Dane Brugler had him like in the 90s in his top 100 list. Either one of those guys, pick whatever, but like, which of those guys you find kind of more interesting coming into the NFL?
Brendan Rice was on my freaks list. He is, legit, 23 mile per hour guy. He's 6'3", 215. He's strong. He got a lot better at USC. Started out his career at Colorado pre Deion Sanders, had some decent moments there, and then got to USC, and this year kind of broke out. I think there was a little, you know, inconsistency with his hands at times as a catcher, but he is an explosive athlete. He is strong. Everybody likes him, you know, like likes how he works. You know, it's tough when you're Jerry Rice's son, this the greatest receiver of all time. I think he's a really intriguing prospect because he's a good size speed guy, and he did get a lot better in 2023. You saw big improvement from him. On the other side, Marshawn Lloyd, he got to USC. So as you said, he started out his career at South Carolina, flashed there. It's just like the production wasn't quite what you would have expected. And I remember in USC's spring game, there was a catch and run where he made where you're like, oh man, this guy is really gifted. He is explosive. He's got great change of direction. There's a lot to like. I would not at all be surprised if Marshawn Lloyd is one of these guys who's a better NFL player than he was in college. He wasn't a bad college player, but it was like, you know, they had Travis Dye last year at USC, who started his career at Oregon, was a super productive all-around back, you know, who before he got hurt late in the year was a really big-time running back for USC. In a ways, Lloyd might I would not be surprised if Marshall Lloyd ended up being a 1,000-yard back at some point in the NFL. Like, he's really talented. It's just, he's also, by the way, and I've said this like at least two or three times already, he's playing behind a terrible offensive line at USC.
So. Right. Yeah. No. Once I dug more into him, I became really intrigued. Washington needs at least a complimentary back, if nothing else, to go with Brian Robinson. So he was somebody that caught my eye. You mentioned Rice on the freaks list. Let's get to this. Of course, I'm going to read your freaks list because I was just intrigued. But literally the first guy you have on the list is the guy who I think, and maybe it's too late for Washington, but the guy I think, if they were to get him in the second round, would presumably they're taking a quarterback of their choice at two, could make their draft a bit of a more even of a home run than you might think if just by taking the quarterback. And that's Chop Robinson, the defensive end from Penn State. Washington, of course, traded away Montez Sweat, Chase Young. They need defensive ends badly. This is not viewed as a deep draft at that position. And the question is sort of like guys like Chop Robinson, who were that borderline first and second, where do they go? He is also, of course, a D.C. area kid, went to Quince Orchard High School. Shout out to them. Played 1 year at Maryland before went to Penn State. But he was number one on your list. What about him from that athletic standpoint? Had you put him on that freaks list, and how did you think he did at the combine?
Yeah, he is super twitchy. He's not, I think he's bigger than some of the draft analysts anticipated. I mean, he came in at 254, which is what Penn State had him at last offseason. He's a guy who ran the 40 and the high 4.4s, which is blazing fast. He broad jumped close to 11 feet. That's also pretty remarkable. But a little bit like, you know, use the term what I did for Marshawn Lloyd. He flashed and there'd be some wow stuff, but I don't think the production was exactly what maybe people wanted to see. Now, keep in mind, he was on one of the best top-ranked defenses in the country, and they had a bunch of good edge guys. Like, it was Adisa Isaac is a really good player. He's not a first-round kind of guy, but he's a guy who got drafted, I think, fairly high as well. I could see Chop Robinson being one of these guys who is a – and I hate to say Brian Burns because Brian Burns is like – but is pretty there's a wow factor to his twitch, but you would definitely see it at times at Penn State. Like, if he gets in the second round, he's going to be a steal for somebody. Cause again, people talk about him like he's 235 pounds and he's not, he's almost 255 and he can really run and you see a burst in him. Like, those can be difference making plays, you know, even if he's inconsistent, some of those plays that guys like that can make can change games.
Who am I? I'm blanking on the name here. He doesn't have like massive production at Penn State. He doesn't have, you know, 12 sacks or something. But the kid I'm blanking, they just with the first round pick a couple years ago, was sort of the same.
Jason Owe?
Yeah.
Jason Owe was longer, leaner, and even faster. Like, Jason Owe, and keep in mind, Jason Owe came, and it was Odafa Owe now, but he came out of around the same time as Micah Parsons. Parsons didn't play in the pandemic year of 2020, but like that guy is super fast. Like, he's mid 4.3 guy. I think Chop, maybe more physical, but similar in terms of just an incredibly freaky athlete. Penn State, by the way, has had as many as any in terms of, and these guys go to the combine, and they back all the numbers up, right? And that guy did, obviously Micah Parsons was special. Saquon was one of my top freaks guys. Then you had the guys like Troy Apke and Mike Gesicki who would just put up crazy numbers as well. And there's a lot of them at that school. It's just their offense has been underwhelming, and that's what keeps them from being more than a 10-win team. And that's probably the gap between them and Ohio State and now Michigan.
Yeah, for sure. The first guy I remember for me who was the, wow, what an athlete, and it completely busted in the pros was Mike Mamula, famously getting picked high in the first round because he blew away everybody at the combine and then jumped up. So I'm always in the back of my head like, okay, well, just because if, so I can look at that away, he had like with no sacks basically. And you're like, wait, what's going on? But then in the pros, I'm not saying he's turned into a pro bowler, but he's become a viable part of it.
Could be disruptive. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm looking with Chop Robinson. Again, very generically, just to say, okay, these guys are generating athletes, like you said, and somehow maybe they're going to be better. That will allow them to contribute more than maybe some of the numbers would suggest. So that's in my head thinking with Robinson that, again, I at this point, I doubt he's going to be there at 36 for Washington, but, late first, early second, you never know how these things go. So,
I mean, a guy who fit in that mode and he went way higher, and he's a little different because he was from Ghana, not like he played high school football, but Ziggy Ansah did not really do much at BYU. And then he tested great, got to the NFL and was a really, now he's a little bigger, and I'm looking at Ziggy Ansah's numbers because I was just curious what they match with Chop. I mean, he was bigger and long, really long arms, but he ran low 4.6s, didn't even broad jump basically a foot less than Chop did, although he was, 15 pounds heavier. But that's a guy who had 50 sacks in his career and, a couple of double-digit sack seasons in Detroit. So, you never know how these guys fit.
Right, for sure. Seeing the clock, I've already kept you a while, so let me burn through a couple of these names here. We just go through them really quick. Just give me anything. Peyton Wilson, linebacker from NC State, was somebody that I added on my Commanders only mock draft. They've needed a Mike linebacker for a bit. His numbers are impressive. He had a really good 40 time, and he's also had a dozen surgeries. What's your view of Peyton Wilson, and why was he on your list?
He's a great football player. I knew Tony Gibson's the defense coordinator there. He said he's the best defensive player I've ever coached in, almost 30 years. I mean, he ran really fast. We knew he was going to do that. 4.4 range guy, makes a ton of plays. He's a great football player. If you told me he was going to be healthy and 100% medical good, I think Peyton Wilson's definitely a first round talent. He is a all pro caliber player. The question is, how well will his shoulder hold up? I mean, and I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if anybody knows the answer to that, but just in terms of as a football player, as a competitor, as an athlete, he's A+ all across the board.
A guy who's a little more lower profile, Marshawn Neyland from Western Michigan. I know Dane Brugler had him like in his 50s pre-combine. A lot of other lists that I was looking at had him significantly lower, but it does feel like he's on the rise. Having talked to some people around the league, like they were seeing him somewhere in the second round at this point, but he's another guy that has those freaky trades. What's the scouting report on him?
Yeah, we had him at 26 going into the combine on our combine freaks list. I mean, he was a former track guy who grew into being, almost 270 pounds, runs really well. It's ironic. He was a teammate of Braden Fisk, who ended up at Florida State, but they played together in 2022. Both really good D linemen, both tested really well. I mean, I would guess he's somewhere in the second round. I mean, as you said, I think there's plenty of D linemen. I don't think it's a great D line group though. And I could see somebody falling for him, maybe he goes in the top 40.
Well, I put him 40 to the Commander, so we're going to hope that's right. This is a shot. I just got, like I said, I was like, I don't want to just go off the cookie cutter list. It was a him or Braylon Trice.
Braylon Trice, really good player at Washington, was you know, our, outside of Laiatu Latu, who was a former teammate of his at Washington, Braylon Trice was probably the next best D lineman in the Pac-12 this year.
The BYU offensive lineman, who I'm going to let you, the TV guy, say his name, 300 Kingsley, what's his last name?
Somataya, I think. Okay.
So he's also, he was very high on your list. He was third on your original freaks list before the start of the season.
Yeah.
One number got me. He hit 21 and a half miles per hour as a freshman running at 318 pounds. Like normally the 21 something is like you is the Terry McLaurin's of the world.
Yeah.
Not the offensive lineman.
Yeah. One of the coaches at BYU, actually multiple coaches at BYU had said that they had worked also with some other NFL, you know, starting offensive linemen who were supposed to be pretty freaky athletes. And they said, this guy's even more gifted than them. He's still really raw. I think he's definitely something of a project, but he's really, really talented. And it'd be interesting to see where he ends up and what he becomes. You know, like Mario Cristobal recruited him to Oregon initially. He also had Penei Sewell, who's obviously off to a really good start with the Lions. They're similar, but a little different in terms of, you know, Sewell's 340 plus and a mauler. Kingsley's still, you know, 320, 325, very talented. I suspect he'll have a really good long career. It's just, I'm interested to see the situation he goes into because there's a lot to work with. He's still pretty raw.
Last one. I keep looking for bigger receivers for the Commanders, and obviously everybody wants speed. Troy Franklin, the kid out of Oregon, is got that 6'2", and he runs, you know, like the wind and all that. He was on your list as well. I didn't love watching his gauntlet drill, if that's right, one at the combine. He seemed to be, it's the one where they want you to run kind of straight and then turn each way to catch passes, and he was kind of all over the place. But that said, you know, played in a big time offense. What's your read on him, or is there another receiver in that range that kind of stands out to you more?
I mean, he's blazing fast and he's wiry and long. I don't, you know, there's a lot of good receivers in this draft. I think, you know, there's probably 15 guys I could tell you that I think will be really good NFL receivers that are coming out of this group. He is definitely one of them. You can see a burst and he can really go. He was the most dangerous guy in that offense, and it was a really dangerous offense. You know, I think at the top of the draft, there's probably four receivers who you're like, oh, I could see any one of these guys as a legit top 10 draft pick. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, and then you have the two LSU guys. Like I think Brian Thomas at LSU, who's you know, as big as the first two and bigger than neighbors, and runs in the low 4.3s, just like he's in that group to me. And then you get to the next batch and there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of speed. Obviously Xavier Worthy showed that to be running 4.21. A.D. Mitchell is probably physically as talented as any receiver in this draft, just in terms of like he makes everything look easy. He's the guy who aces the eyeball test when you see him in warmups and see some of the stuff he can do effortlessly. I think it's that good of a receiver draft. You know, so whether it's Troy Franklin or not, because he's definitely a speed guy, I think there's a lot of guys who you can get almost anything you want in this draft, I think, if you need a receiver.
At Bruce Feldman CFB on Twitter, read him in The Athletic. I hadn't read it yet, but your new story about who are the best coaches in college football, it's always a fun conversation, especially in the era with no Nick Saban.
No Jim Harbaugh anymore for us either. No,
right. Very, very, very different world. So go check that out as well. Bruce, really appreciate it. Great seeing you in Indy, and you know, look forward to reading what else you got coming up here in the next few weeks as we steam towards the draft.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ben.
All right. Great stuff from Bruce. I really, you know, look, there are people who have some of these, you know, reporter insider jobs that, you know, I think there's getting information, but then there's interpreting it and there's understanding and knowing, are you getting played by people that you're talking to, or, you know, you know, who's giving you the real dope? I think that Bruce is one of the better ones when it comes to this. I really do believe that you know, he has got a good BS detector. And I don't mean a Ben Standing detector. I think the I really enjoy it. So I you know, nobody's perfect. I'm just saying I take when he's telling us these things, I really do buy that this is some really good information. So appreciate Bruce's time there. As I said before, Austin Eckler was one of the players that we spoke with today. A bunch of other ones came through on Thursday and Friday. So I wanted to play a little bit of that so you have a feel for who the guy is. He's definitely a, you know, he's got an entrepreneurial deal going on. If you follow him on social media, he's promoting his not just his foundation, but other parts of his portfolio. So I thought he was a really interesting person to listen to. And, you know, obviously from the perspective of Washington, why, you know, what's going on with him? Where is he at in his career? What does he think he can accomplish here? So I did want to play some of that. You'll hear myself and also some of my colleagues asking him questions today. So here we go. Here's some Austin Eckler for you on the Standing Room Only podcast.
What's going on, crew?
Hi, Austin. Nikki Javal with the Washington Post. What made you decide to come to Washington?
Yeah, there's a few factors. Just flat out, first off, is interest. They were definitely the most interested. And I think that comes down to kind of the situation in the running back room. Is that it seems like, hey, they have B-Rob over here. But, hey, if we can bring in another back to kind of, you know, be that tandem and continue to add some leadership to the team, then – you know, that's why I thought it was another good fit for myself, too, to come into a new team with new coaches and kind of a younger running back room.
And have you talked to B-Rob at all since all this?
I have not yet. Oh, I'm looking down here. You guys are up here. I have not yet. So I'll be reaching out here pretty soon, though.
Hey, Austin. John Kine from ESPN. I'm curious that this team has signed you. You have Zach Ertz, Bobby Wagner, veterans who have been around a little bit, provide that leadership. What do you feel you guys can add to a team that's trying to rebuild a program here?
Yeah, you know, well, from first, you know, appearance as we got here, the energy seems to be really high, which is great because I believe the leadership comes from the top down as far as what culture you're trying to set. And you can bring players into that have been around the league that can help spread that culture and hold the standard on the field. But it takes the entire organization to be all in on it. And so when you have leadership that comes in and can hold that standard and have been around the league and you bring coaches that have the same type of energy, then you can really create a special culture that goes and helps win the games. It's not necessarily the stuff that is measurable, but it's the stuff that helps you know, increase the things that are.
And what do you feel you add as a player?
Wow. a lot. It depends on what you're asking about. I'll give you a couple off the top, though. Just as far as a playmaker, I'm going to score some touchdowns for you, that's for sure, if you can get me in the red zone and find a way to get me in the ball in some space. As far as a leader, I'm going to bring some energy. You're going to hear me at practice. You can hear me in the locker room. You can hear me talk to the young guys. You can hear me bringing people along. You're going to find me in the weight room all the time and also pushing people in there as well. And really, I really take pride in helping people be the best version of themselves, but starting with myself first. And so that's what you're going to get when you have me on the team.
Hey, Austin. Scott Abraham, ABC7. Welcome to Washington. I think a lot of fans can appreciate almost your underdog story, in a sense, going undrafted, Division II football. How have you kind of embraced that role, and does that kind of re-energize you now coming from L.A. to Washington?
Yeah, I wouldn't say – well, first off, thank you. Nice meeting you. I wouldn't say it re-energizes me. I would say it just energizes me. It's what has given me energy for as long as I've been in the league. You know, I've had everything to prove every single year, and especially my first year as a rookie, undrafted, wearing number 3, running down on punt and kickoff, and really been able to build up a reputation for myself by embracing the role that I had at the time and doing it so well that they wanted to give me more responsibility. And so that's how I've been able to build myself up. So I 100% represent the underdogs out there and the people that are always trying to continue to build themselves up into a role where they see themselves, but maybe aren't there yet. And, you know, I'll continue to be that representation. I love wearing that because it's so important, because it's not just football. It's bigger than football. It goes into life in general, where people are trying to move themselves forward. And, you know, it's tough, and you don't always have the best circumstances. But guess what? There's people like myself that have been examples of not having the best circumstances but still finding a way. And I know I just encourage other people to try to do the same.
And Austin, as you know, this franchise has a long storied history. unfortunately, over the last couple of years, has some struggles. But what is it like for you to be in this position to maybe be part of the solution to help revitalize this franchise and put it in the right direction?
Yeah, we're in the business of sports. And in the business of sports, you're going to go through ups and downs depending on, you know, coaches and players and staff and support. There's so much that goes into the ecosystem of sports. And you're always trying to be the most competitive that you can possibly be and trying to sustain that for as long as you can. But unfortunately, as you know, we even, you know, experienced last year with the Chargers, you know, go through some down years. And so you try to bring in a new chemistry, new players to try to turn it around. And that's exactly what we have going on here. And so I'm excited to do it. I've seen it done before with actually Coach Lynn as my head coach, where we made a couple runs to the playoffs And so I know it's been done before. I've seen it. We saw it last year too with the Texans, you know, how they went through their season and had a bounce back season. So it's been done before, and those things that have been done before can be done again. And so I'm looking forward to, you know, bringing some energy over here and getting ourselves on the right path. And it doesn't have to take long. So I think we can get something going this year.
Got time for two more.
Hey, Austin, Ben Standing with The Athletic. Welcome to town. I know there was a lot going on with the Chargers last season. By the numbers, this was not for you a season that matched the previous couple. What kind of, I guess for you, what led to some of that, and how do you kind of prepare for this season to, you know, to have a statistical rebound?
Yeah, we had, you know, a different philosophy with our new coordinator, and then we also had just a different philosophy, it seemed like, with our offense last year, where it was, hey, we're going to throw the ball down the field, we're going to run downhill. And that was the philosophy we went with. And, you know, I think it was just different for my type of play style, where I, you know, am strongest at. And it had obviously effects on just my career there in my last year. And then also dealing with some injuries. I had high ankle sprain week one, and I'll come out the gates, 150 yards, you know, a touchdown, and then whack, you know, high ankle sprain. And then I'm out for the next 4 weeks, and then, you know, come back and then sprain my other ankle. And so, just trying to battle through, you know, I'm not trying to make excuses because I'm on the field. If you're on the field, you got to give it all, and there you have an expectation. And so it's something that, you know, I've tried to push through as much as I could. And, you know, unfortunately, wasn't as good of a year as I've had in the past. But as you know, one of the greats used to tell me, Philip Rivers, Nuke Chepe, which means begin again. And it's exactly what we're going to be doing here in Washington, is beginning again. Looking forward to it.
All right. Big thanks again to Bruce Feldman for his time. I just want to thank Austin Eckler as well. And of course, most of all, thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. Still a long way to go. I didn't even mention, but next week is the NFL owners meeting. And what's interesting about that, in previous years, that would have been a huge part of the discussion, because Roger Goodell would have been peppered with Dan Snyder questions. I don't know if we'll get any Washington topics this time. I would assume no, and I really hope no. But it is an opportunity to hear from people around the league. Adam Peters will be there, and we are expected to chat with him. But Dan Quinn will be there. All the coaches will be there. Basically, the whole league is there. It's a really interesting experience. So we'll get to that after I come back from the owners' meeting. But that's just coming up. Something to consider for next week. That is it for now, though. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.